Money FM 89.3, best of prime time.
This is Primetime on Money FM 89.3. I'm Howie Lim. Now, Essex Business School's Deputy Dean Professor Aarti Ramaswamy recently conducted a study outlining the importance of organizational context and measuring the relationship between gender, mentoring, and career success. She joins us today with insights into her findings. Professor, thanks for joining us.
Thanks so much, Howie, for having me.
It's been some time since we last spoke. In fact, we figured out it was probably 3 years ago. How much
That's
has changed, you reckon, in this space, and how the results from the study can help inform career management processes?
This is a fantastic question to segue into the motivation of the study. And I wanted to share the story because one of the conversations that we were having with a CEO actually on the flight back from one city to another in the US was trying to see how he could retain the women in the organization. And this was one of the big four accounting firms that he was running. And he was saying, look, we were trying everything. They have female mentors. We have a great incentive system. It's a great culture, but something doesn't seem right. And what is it that we could do? And we came back from that trip and we were thinking with our co-authors, what is it that's really going on? And we imagined that maybe some of the things that organizations might be addressing or trying to address with this notion of career management processes, especially for women and especially in male-gendered organizations, might not be the right fit with the way they were going about it at this moment. So we said, what's really the crux of the situation? Women have mentors, they have female mentors, but what is it about another mentoring relationship that could make it work? And we realized that in a situation like this, we want to leverage the talent that's there in the organization. And we were finding that organizations were throwing at all the female employees tactics and incentive systems or career management systems that were not really working for that specific context. So the context became super important for us to understand how a mentoring relationship could work. And in this case, one of the things that became particularly interesting to study was how women see power and legitimacy in organizations and how organizations can leverage the power and legitimacy that others have in order to help women, especially in contexts that are mired by certain stereotypes. Maybe there's a culture that's not very open. Maybe there are structures or opportunity systems that do not always promote a certain group versus the other. And looking at sponsorship, looking at legitimacy, there are many things that organizations can do with respect to trying to find the opportunities for women to succeed in these kinds of settings that are typically associated with men. And this is something that can be of importance to organizations as well, not just with sex ratios and the number of women or men in an organization, but also looking at the developmental opportunities that can be associated with women's advancement.
When you say, though, male-gendered settings, what do you mean exactly? Just the boardroom? Is that too much of a generalization?
Yeah, that's a very important question, Howie, to really clarify what does male-gendered mean. And we can look at it from two ways. One is from what we call a normative perspective. One is called a numerical perspective. Now, the normative perspective is a way or a lens to look at an organization from the perspective of culture. What is the culture like? Is it very competitive? Is it up or out? Is it one that is very inclusive? Is it one where it's very apparent that there are some groups that are favored over the other? So you can look at male-gendered organizations as stereotypically masculine in some ways. And then that's from the normative cultural perspective. From the numerical perspective, which is very simple, is to just account the number of men and women at various levels in an organization. So there are many professions, such as, say, law, and there's enough data to show that there are enough, as many women as men who graduate from, say, law schools. If you follow the number of women who enter law firms, you would find that at the entry level, they are the same. You know, there's about 50-50 parity at the entry level. But as they go up in the organization, that sort of peters out. And that's a signal for the kind of culture that may be embedded in a certain profession, and not necessarily to say one profession is more stereotypically masculine or not. It's just the way the profession has been built over years with respect to the incentive system. What is it that men and women need to do to actually come up in the organization? And so culture and number, those two things are key indicators of the pulse and how stereotypically masculine an organization can be.
Let's talk about organizations addressing some of these gaps and what's happening. Mm-hmm.
When I hear this question, Howie, I always think about the fit between the individual and the organization, because we are in a social fabric in an organization, and it's not just an organization's responsibility, but it's also an individual, the group, the supervisor, the team's responsibility. So I think this is an opportunity for the entire organization to move some levers, whether the individual or the larger group, to see how we can institute certain initiatives of developmental opportunities. So just as an example, okay, there could be that organizations think about formal mentoring systems, like looking beyond just driving diversity. We also need to look at ensuring how inclusion can be embedded and institutionalized in the organization, examining the dynamics in the organization between mentors and mentees, introducing new initiatives that could build a certain culture that is truly developmental and a culture of equal opportunity. And it might be easy to say, but if you clarify, what is it that the organization wants to do with the talent? Where do they really want to go? And I think these are very important reflective questions for them to truly, truly move ahead. And on the individual side, there is tremendous agency in how we as women or men can actually take charge of our careers. We can find our own peer mentoring circle. So beyond the formal mentoring systems or a culture that an organization may have more influence on, we can start our own peer mentoring circles. And setting up those kind of learning circles, sharing and learning from each other's journey, I think there's tremendous value in looking to your peers, looking to certain role models, and having those chats, because maybe we don't have the time for a full-fledged mentoring relationship. And sometimes that can be scary for mentors, because, hey, can you be my mentor? And like, what does that even mean? What do you really expect from me? And so when you have a conversation around a certain concern or a certain topic or a goal, or there's a dilemma, I think those conversations can also be mentoring conversations, but you just don't label it as a mentor versus a mentee. But we can look at this from multiple angles and find tremendous value in conversations that truly elevate the concerns and resolve the concerns of people in the organization.
Professor, how important, though, is it to make it more formal, so to speak? I mean, when it's in an informal setting or comes up in casual conversations, sometimes it doesn't quite stick.
There is tremendous value in all forms of mentoring. The basic driver of the success of whether it's a formal mentoring or informal mentoring is really the purpose of the mentoring relationship and why it was initially set, right? So if, say, the HR group in an organization says, hey, we want to fast track some individuals, we want to provide them some mentoring because they have tremendous capacity, but they need some guidance, and they need that perspective, maybe from a peer or maybe from a senior, to be able to move to the next step, that still is manageable. And I think it's setting up the expectations and the context of a formal mentoring relationship is very, very important, so that you don't mix up the goals. You get in knowing what you're getting into. In an informal mentoring relationship, I mean, sometimes you don't know you're actually having a mentor. And this is what I've noticed when I coach senior executives, or when I'm looking at my MBA students or the executive MBA students, they say, but I don't have any mentors. I say, wait a minute, take a step back and think about all the developmental conversations that we actually had. And maybe it's in the family, maybe it's in your friend circle, maybe one of your relatives, maybe it's a professor from one of the schools that you graduated from. And putting that lens back into looking at it as a developmental conversation rather than giving it a label as a mentor or a mentee or a protege, I think allows people to realize that they do have the support. Now the goal is to try to deepen those conversations and relationships that they've had before.
And also talk to us about what businesses can do then to help groom these women leaders of the future. I mean, are there enough of them in the first place? Too many questions, perhaps, Professor, at one go.
All right, I'm going to try to address that with multiple levers again. And I'm really getting more and more interested in the concept of polarities and leveraging polarities. And what do I mean by that? I mean, when we look at initiatives that are targeted towards a particular group, I think there's always these questions about why this group, why not the other group? It becomes one versus the other. And I'm trying to see how can organizations change the conversation around grooming the talent with and both, right? Those are the terms that would actually allow for a certain sense of inclusion with respect to setting up the need for an initiative like this. So when you say grooming women leaders, okay, what about men? What about the others? Anyway, we need to groom the entire organization and we need everybody's help as allies. We need everybody's help to give the new perspective, to give feedback, and to also enable in setting the context for these initiatives. And rather than looking at quick fixes, I think individuals and organizations, they need to take time to reflect on who they want to be and who they truly want to represent. And grooming leaders requires not only to look at ability and the motivation. So ability, can I do something? Do I have the skills? Motivation is, do I want to do something? Does it even interest me to do something? Is to also look at what are the right conditions that allow individuals to maximize their potential, right? So I look at it from the perspective of what I call three C's, right? The culture, competencies, and connections. If you look at the notion of culture, I truly believe that the people make the place. And this could mean two things, right? On the one hand, it's the dynamics of the school, the workplace, any association, wherever you are, it's very much influenced by the demographics, the personalities, and the profiles of the people that they have. On the other hand, when you say culture, the people make the place also means that who are currently in the organization have the ability to shape it. So if you are someone who has the power and the privilege to make decisions about membership in an organization or who gets into a leadership position, it might be interesting for decision makers to ask themselves, what are our notions of talent and progress? And how does this impact my decision about who gets to be the next person leading a certain initiative or leading the organization? So the stories and the narratives about who represents this organization and who represents this position and the place very much is needed as a reflective exercise. If we think about competence, I think everybody comes with a gift, a skill or an attitude or an experience, all of which kind of make up the mosaic of our school and workplaces and organizations and even families, right? And my job, I always believe that my job, your job, our collective job is to kind of recognize that gift, find a place for it, and elevate that skill or attitude or experience to the next level. Yeah. And at this moment, if you think about last year, 2020 has been incredible and an unforgettable year. Our families, teams, schools, workplaces, and communities and governments, I mean, across countries, they have undergone tremendous disruption, requiring new ways of thinking, being, and living. And businesses need diverse perspectives and diverse talent to solve the social, environmental, and business challenges that they would face, whether it's in sustainability, digital leadership, innovation, mental health, and what have you these days. Yeah.
Professor, thank you so much for your insights today, and please stay safe.
Thank you so much, Howie. It was a pleasure talking to you.
Deputy Dean of Essex Business School, Professor Aarti Ramaswamy. This is Prime Time on Money FM 89.3.
To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.